This is Dave Gahary on the corner of Wall and Fraud. I'm going to do a little background material about what our guest is involved in. For years, as the stock markets raced higher, few involved in cashing in on the excesses were interested in sounding a cautionary note. From business writers and reporters to cheerleading analysts granted star status on CNBC, to the individual investors who were watching their portfolios grow, no one wanted to end the party. When the end began in March of 2000, it took a year for many of those involved to begin pointing the finger and looking for someone to blame. In June 2001, congressional hearings analyzing the analysts produced nothing substantial. Perhaps due to this and a private lawsuit, New York State Attorney General Eliot Spitzer began a 10-month probe into Merrill Lynch's research practices. In April of this year, Spitzer released his findings, which revealed, among other things, Merrill analysts publicly touting stocks and privately disparaging them. A $100 million settlement was squeezed out of Merrill, and in the following month, many state securities regulators were assigned to investigate the major investment bank's research practices. Massachusetts got Credit Suisse First Boston, the investment arm of Credit Suisse Group, the Zurich-based financial services firm. In October, Massachusetts filed an administrative complaint against CSFB, demanding a monetary fine and a change in the way they conduct their research business. Last Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal reported that some more damaging emails had been uncovered by Massachusetts regulators, which seemed to draw a more clear picture of a Wall Street riddled with conflicts of interest. To help us understand more clearly how Wall Street and government regulators, ostensibly there to protect us, how they screwed us, basically, is William Francis Galvin, the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary Galvin, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. Sir, that's basically Secretary of State, right?
Right. Correct.
Okay, the equivalent. How did you get involved in this?
Well, I'm the Chief Securities Regulator. Under Massachusetts law, the responsibility for the regulation of security sales or any aspect of financial services really falls to me. And we've been very aggressive in this area during my tenure, and in fact, we were the first state really to point out some of the problems with day trading and to seek tighter regulation about that. We've been very active on the part of our consumers in Massachusetts. Our involvement in this particular case stems, as your narrative was suggesting, from an awareness by state regulators of the absence of review of the conduct of analysts and large houses. We're very active through our national association, the North American Association of Securities Regulators, and it was decided that various states would become responsible as the lead investigators for particular companies. We drew Credit Suisse First Boston in part because of our record, but also because of our commitment to this investigation, and that led to the filing of the complaint. We're acting not only on our own behalf, but also on behalf of 42 other states and jurisdictions. So. We've been keeping them abreast of our progress. As you know, there have been some discussions about a so-called global settlement or a national settlement of these issues, and we have been working with the SEC in that regard. Unfortunately, Credit Suisse First Boston has shown very little interest in that, and they've shown very little interest in changing the bad behaviors that they've engaged in. In fact, they deny them, even though the evidence that we have collected is quite convincing.
Right. I read the entire 20-page complaint, which is available online on your website, on the state's website, and also the 18 exhibits. And as you said, it is pretty clear that that there is a link between investment banking and research.
The essence of the problem is, to put it in the bluntest terms, they were giving dishonest advice. They were giving advice which misled investors, not just the companies, the investors rather, that might have had a direct contractual relationship with the company, but because they knew that their information and the information they purveyed was widely circulated, whether it be in the business press or in the business broadcasting industry, or simply because they've spent so much time and money branding themselves as a purveyor of reliable information, they knew that the information and the advice that they gave in terms of buy or sell would carry tremendous weight, and they marketed that fact to the people who they sought investment banking business from.
Right.
So in effect, what they were giving out was dishonest advice, misleading many, many investors, and the losses have been staggering.
Right, and of course, Merrill Lynch settled with New York State Attorney General Elliot Spitzer for $100 million, and he also publicly said that he could have criminally indicted them and destroyed them. Why do you think he stopped short of that?
Well, I think there's, you'd have to speak to him specifically, but I have, as you know, we are working with him on other aspects of this particular case. I think he shares the concern that many people have about doing in a significant financial house that might have adverse implications for our economy. On the other hand, I think there has to come a point where we say we're not going to tolerate misbehavior no matter how big a firm is. You know, a few months back when Arthur Andersen was under criminal indictment in Texas, many people said, oh, this is terrible. It's going to take Arthur Andersen out. What will we do? Well, Arthur Andersen is virtually gone, and the economy continues, and other people have committed to pick up the business.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, we as a country, as an economy, cannot afford to have large-scale dishonesty in the marketplace. And that's really what Credit Suisse First Boston stands for.
They stand for
large-scale dishonesty, widespread dishonesty, misrepresentation that cost many innocent people lots of money.
Absolutely. And, of course, much of this was spearheaded by the head of their global technology group, Frank Quattrone.
It would seem from the evidence that we've mounted that Mr. Quattrone is very deeply involved.
Right, who's out in Palo Alto, California, I believe. He's one of the few investment bankers who is not based in New York. He actually had his own little, what they call a fiefdom out there,
mm-hmm.
where the research analysts reported right to him, and he was basically in charge of hiring and firing them.
So that's one of the fundamental problems that we've had and we've asked for change in, that investment banking should not be making decisions, personnel decisions or compensation decisions for research analysts. We think there's an inherent conflict. If we're going to unravel this problem, we have been seeking a separation of the investment banking business from the research and analysis business. To the extent that that's possible, a complete severing, if not, certainly to remove obvious conflicts such as setting compensation, decisions about career advancement and other aspects of their involvement, because avoiding conflict in the future is really the ultimate goal. To be able to tell people that when they hear advice, it may not be right. Analysts can make mistakes and will make mistakes, but at least it's honest. It's a good faith piece of advice based on the information that they have in front of them.
Right. Now you, as Errol mentioned earlier, Massachusetts is continuing with their case against Microsoft.
That's actually a decision of our Attorney General Tom Riley, and I applaud him for that. I, as you mentioned, we've had a history of going it alone, but that's not my department. I'm the
right.
civil side of enforcement. In this case, his involvement is with a suit that was brought by actually his predecessor, Scott Hashbarger.
Right. But it seems like you might be going at this alone also, because it was reported that Elliot Spitzer contacted you and asked you not to to go ahead with your
Well, contract. I think that was at an earlier point. We subsequently had several meetings with Attorney General Spitzer and other regulators, and what I can tell you is, and it's interesting, that the regulators, when we last met, in New York about 2 weeks ago, agreed that not only is Credit Suisse worthy of a complaint, that Credit Suisse and one other company are far more egregious in their behavior than any of the other brokerage houses that are being investigated. And in fact, we've referred matters and will continue to refer matters to prosecutors, including Attorney General Spitzer, relating to Credit Suisse and other firms when we think it's appropriate. So I think having reviewed the evidence, I think they've concluded that the complaint was necessary in order to, first of all, to notify the public. One of the problems in this whole area, and you alluded to this in your introduction, is that for too long, regulators have been willing to make deals off to the side with the companies, even when the companies were caught or agreed that they'd made mistakes. And I think that ill-served the investing public. I think it's important to introduce some transparency into the whole situation. And I think the reason that that's so important is this. The exposure of the American public to the fluctuations of the market is dramatic. far more than a generation ago, when perhaps only people of certain level of income were invested. Today, many people seeking the returns that are not available through conventional investments, as well as the indirect exposure they may have through 401ks or pension funds, have massive exposure to the market. And it's necessary, it is absolutely necessary for government to assure them, just as we are assured by local governments that the weights and measures at our grocery stores work and the gas pumps are giving you the right amount, it is all the more important when it comes to our financial health that the government take an active role. And I think the only way to do that is not only to bring a prosecution when it's deserved, but also to put the information out there. As you noted, we have put the complaint on our website, because the public has a right to know.
With all the gory details.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there are expletives in there. So I'm going to warn our listeners, if you do the website, there are...
I'm sure they won't be shocked. They may have uttered a few of their own as they opened their statements.
Right, exactly.
That's another story.
Right, exactly. And today, it's a coincidence, but in today's New York Post, there's mention in the business section on page 33, it's payback time. Regulators target street pros pocketbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And they do mention Massachusetts. Are you going to be going after Frank Quattron individually?
Well, we're certainly going to be subpoenaed him, as a matter of fact, for our ongoing hearing. The next level we're at now is a hearing on our case, which will be presumably in the first quarter of the year.
This is in front of an administrative judge?
That's right. Okay. CFSB has filed an answer. They've denied all, which is interesting because their general counsel has been running around previous to the filing of their answer, saying how they've reformed. Now they've said there was nothing to reform from because they never did anything wrong.
Right.
But they were quite belligerent in their response, and I think it's really just belligerence in the interest of protecting their outrageous behavior because the evidence is so compelling. But our next step, of course, will be to go forward with an administrative hearing, and Mr. Quattron has been subpoenaed.
Well, that's great. Let me explain to our listeners, this Frank Quattron, who's an investment banker out in California. It's reported that his income, I think it was for 2000, was in excess of $100 million. That's for 1 year. So the kind of money these people are making and taking, it's beyond belief.
It's not the making that concerns us, it's the taking. And when you have folks who are like Mr. Quattron and others who are aware of the fact that information is being given to unsuspecting investors that's wrong, that's dishonest,
right,
that's taking.
Absolutely. And as a sidebar to your investigation, it's produced another lawsuit. AOL investors are suing Credit Suisse for...
I think we'll see a lot of secondary lawsuits or class action lawsuits. The problem is many small investors simply won't be able to do that. It isn't worth their financial wherewithal to do it. The legal representation would be too high. And that's where the role of the state governments is very important. Unfortunately, I don't see, given the dissemination of this information and the amounts that have been lost, how we can make these people whole. I wish we could. And that's why, frankly, we've been less interested in the fines, although we think a fine is deserved,
right,
than we are in a change in behavior.
Right.
But nevertheless, it is helpful to some investors that this information is put out there. And to the extent that those people can be made whole, we're quite pleased about that.
Right. I see that you're asking for a fine just about $2 million.
Well, that would be our share. You mentioned the $100 million that Merrill was fined. The states all shared in that, so we use that as a benchmark. But frankly, as I mentioned earlier, the regulators, having reviewed the evidence against CFSB, have already indicated that they feel that any comparison to Merrill is totally inadequate, that
wow,
CFSB's conduct is far worse.
Wow. And, of course, the $100 million settlement equated to only 1.9 to 2.6% of the money that was misappropriated.
That's the point. Right. And unfortunately, in the past year, the trend has been firms get caught. They have taken massive amounts of money out of the economy, out of the pockets of investors.
Right.
They pay a fine, which sounds great, heavy, but it really isn't.
And they neither admit nor deny wrongdoing.
That's right. And then they go and find a more creative way to do it. They just said they wouldn't do again.
Right.
And that's what we have to bring an end to, because the marketplace is here to stay. Hopefully it's going to have another positive week this week. But it's in all our interest to restore confidence in the financial services industry. It's in all our interest to make sure our economy goes forward. But we can't do it with dishonesty, and that's what this is all about.
Absolutely right. And I really want to thank you for... for really taking the lead here, you know, even more so than Spitzer has. I mean,
I think he's done a fine job.
Absolutely.
We're very admiring of what he's done, and I think what this says is the state regulators sometimes can be far more effective. We're closer to the ground in terms of the investing public, and we hear things more directly, and we're freed of some of the environmental pressures that are on the SEC.
The political pressures.
Political, when I say environmental, the whole congressional environment is often driven by the securities industry, and
right.
I think the state regulators are in a better position to avoid those types of problems.
And history has shown that state regulators do have a record of being acting more tough on perpetrators. We had Arthur Levitt on 2 weeks ago, and I asked him why is it that I never read about a firm that admits that they did anything wrong. He said it's because of the lack of resources in the SEC. Is that why the SEC, it seemed to be asleep at the switch, and the state securities regulators?
Well, I think the resources are a legitimate issue. I think Levitt has also been quoted, I've heard him say, and it's true, that unfortunately the environment that the SEC finds itself working in, namely the pressure from congressional sources, and I have to tell you, I'm a Democrat, but it's really bipartisan. The securities industry has had enormous influence on the Congress and on previous administrations as well as this administration as well, and that's unfortunate because there's been a tendency to give the securities industry a kid glove treatment when in fact they don't deserve it. I think the opportunity to regulate or the obligation to regulate has fallen more heavily on the states because of this, and the states have stepped up to the line and fulfilled their obligation.
So what do you think is going to happen with this? Will there be a global settlement?
I don't know. There will continue to be conversations and discussions. Quite candidly, a global settlement is only meaningful if it actually means change. If it's only a term of art or a rhetorical flourish that allows everyone to declare victory and go home and having accomplished nothing,
right,
then I don't think it's worth it. The objective here is permanent change within the industry so that investors in the future can, when they hear a recommendation or they hear information disseminated, they can believe that at least it's honest. It may not be accurate because people will make mistakes. There is risk inherent in the marketplace.
Right.
But people have a right to honest information, not tainted by essentially commercial bribery by many other means.
Right, legal up until this point,
right,
hopefully. So what's going to happen is that the administrative judge is going to hear your complaint.
We're going to go ahead. The CFSB has indicated to everyone that that's what they want to do. They speak in terms of they're anxious to cooperate, but the fact is they're not cooperating. They're obviously vigorously fighting this. They still think they're playing by the old rules.
Right.
The old rules don't apply.
Right. And what do you think is going to happen? What do you think the upshot of all of this?
I don't know. I know this. We're going to go ahead with our case. We think we have a strong one. We're certainly going to make sure the public is well aware of the details of the case. And we'll let the administrative judge make a decision. We think we've done the right thing in bringing this forward. We think the activities of CFSB are unconscionable, and we don't think this type of company, if this is the way it's going to behave, we don't think this type of company ought to be in business, at least not in Massachusetts. I don't know about every place else.
All right, I agree with you 100%. Secretary Galvin, I want to thank you so much
for taking
the time out to spend about 20 minutes